What's up, everyone? I am your host, Kelsey Conway, here with another episode of the Bengals Beat Podcast. We are at the Enquirer Studio with the crew, Sam Green and Phil Didion, our producers here. We are all ready to break down the Bengals' win in Arizona and talk a little bit about the upcoming matchup against the Seattle Seahawks. So the biggest takeaway coming out of Arizona is that Joe Burrow is back. And yesterday, during his weekly media session, he said this is as close to as 100% as he's been since training camp. And he looked it against the Cardinals, and the Bengals desperately needed that win, and they got it. And not only did they win, they looked like the offense you expected them to be all season long before Burrow suffered that calf injury. So a huge boost in the locker room around the team after that win, because it felt like everybody almost could like breathe again, and they got a new sense of life in them, because with Joe Burrow healthy, this team is a different team. And it's not to take anything away from all the other players, but with Joe Burrow healthy, you think this offense can score 30 points a game. And that's what they're going to need to do if they want to get to where they want to be at the end of the season. And that is playing in the postseason, because if you're looking at what Miami, Buffalo, some of these teams in the AFC are putting up, you got to score 30 points to hang with them. So Burrow looked fantastic. The Bengals offensive line played really well in Arizona. And of course, Ja'Marr Chase, who's always open, played awesome as well. He just won AFC Offensive Player of the Week for his performance against the Cardinals. So lots of good coming out of the Bengals offense. A lot of things to improve on the defensive side of the ball. That's still the biggest question mark for this team. They're allowing a lot of explosive plays and just some plays that you've seen them make in years past. And Lou Anarumo said yesterday the biggest takeaway is that Jordan Battle is going to start seeing some more time. So you're going to see the Alabama rookie, who, when we get to our chat in this episode with Mike Renner, the Messenger's draft analyst, who knows a lot about Battle and what he did at Alabama, he'll get into a little bit more detail on what to expect. But that strong safety position is not yet solidified. They're going to try and figure that out. And you know, whoever plays better this game will probably end up being the starter coming out of the bye week, because that's coming. But just some things that the Bengals have to work through on defense. They need to tackle better, and they've got to clean up some things on the back end. And this is a game I think they can do it. Seattle's offense is good. They have great receivers. Geno Smith's playing at a high level. But this is a game where the Bengals defense needs to show they've put what's happened so far this season in the past, they've learned from it, and now they're going to get more towards the unit you expected them to be, which was a top 10 unit. And they just have not played up to that standard right now, but they have the players to do it. And I fully expect with Lou Anarumo and the way he runs that team, they're going to get it figured out. And if the offense can start clicking and the defense can start clicking coming out of the bye, then you should feel good about what these Bengals can do, because they're about to hit the toughest stretch of their schedule. But it all starts with Sunday's game against the Seahawks. The Seahawks come to town after a bye week, which typically bodes well for teams coming off their bye week. Their coaching staff gets an extra couple of days to prepare for the opponent. They're going to be healthy. They're 3-1, and they've beaten the Lions. They've beaten some other teams like the Carolina Panthers and the New York Giants. But the Bengals, this is a pretty, in my opinion, evenly matched game. And you could even give the nod maybe to the Bengals because of Joe Burrow over Geno Smith. But I think the Bengals can put up points on this Seattle defense. Carolina scored 27 points. Carolina is one of the worst offenses in the NFL. But the thing with this game is that Joe Burrow is going to have to be very accurate, and the Bengals offensive line has got to play really well, because Seattle's going to make the Bengals offense try and go the length of the field. Picture how the Bengals have to play the Ravens. They kind of run a similar style defense with what they want to do. There's not these crazy edge rushers. The Seahawks do have a ton of sacks. They rank in the top 5 in sacks, but they come from all different players, which is almost a better scenario than when we've seen the Bengals go up against people like TJ Watt, Myles Garrett, Jeffrey Simmons, you know, those players that can just wreak havoc. The Bengals offense is going to have to collectively play really well, and it's going to be about every single person playing up to their standard, because when you have a defense that tries to make you make your own mistakes, this is where the Bengals are really going to have to be dialed in. And I think with Joe Burrow back playing the way he is, I mean, if you saw the play towards the end of the game where Travion Williams had a miss, you know, there was a miscue on what exactly the play was going to be. Travion thought it was a different play, didn't do the right thing. And Burrow, you can see, like, yells at him to listen. And they came off the field talking to each other. Burrow does not like when things, people don't listen and get small details messed up in what they're trying to do on offense, as does any quarterback. They don't like when people mess up what they're trying to do out there, which is expected. But specifically Burrow, he's very competitive. And he's like, if someone's going to beat me, it's because they played better, not because we beat ourselves. And against this Seahawks defense, the Bengals offense cannot beat themselves. That means no pre-snap penalties. That means playing well on the offensive line to give Burrow time. And of course, being patient. Burrow might have to have more smaller completions that turn into bigger chunks because the players turn them into that. Like Ja'Marr Chase might turn a 6 or 7 yard completion into a 13 yard completion against this defense because they're going to try and take away all of those explosive plays. So that's what you should be looking for when you're watching the Bengals offense. They're going to have to be perfect to beat the Seattle team, and they need to win this game. It won't be called a must win like it was last week, but in my opinion, it is still a must win because if you can get to 3-3 at the bye, you give yourself the whole chance in the second half of the season to make a postseason run. But this is a game they're playing the Seahawks at home. They're going to have their home crowd. These are the games that you need to take care of if you want to be an AFC contender. And the Bengals have the players to do it on the defensive side of the ball. We talked about it a little bit, but on offense, the Seahawks have one of the more talented offensive units with their players. DK Metcalf, of course, their star wide receiver, and Tyler Lockett, who has been one of the NFL's best wide receivers for a long time. And then, of course, their running back, Kenneth Walker, who was one of the best players in the NFL last year as a rookie. And Geno Smith's playing at a really high level. So I think this is a very evenly matched game between these two teams. And as I mentioned, with the Seahawks coming off of a bye, they're going to want this one. And so the Bengals are going to have to play really well on the defensive side of the ball, specifically against Tyler Lockett, who I think can just make defensive coordinators so mad because he's so good and can turn plays into 50-yard gains if you're not tackling the right way. And, you know, he's just been really good. So I think Tyler Lockett there is kind of the player that this defense has to make sure that they shut down, because I think they'll do a good enough job on DK Metcalf, but Tyler Lockett, how they move him around, play him in the slot, I think he's their key on offense. So I'll be interested to see what type of game plan defensive coordinator Lou Anarumo has. But at the end of the day, it's about doing the things that Lou Anarumo expects them to do, play sound on defense. And the Bengals are looking to have their best defensive performance this week, bring that into the bye, and then it's essentially the start of a new season. So that's just some thoughts on this upcoming game against the Seahawks. And for more on what you saw from the Bengals last week and the upcoming matchup, here is my conversation with the Messenger's Mike Renner.
Is it week 6? Happy week 6 to you, Mike.
Week 6 already. Man.
It feels like
it's flying by.
Well, before we get into serious talk, I would like to ask you, since it's fresh on my mind, what are your thoughts on Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift? Because I just read that she's apparently going to be at his game on Thursday night.
I think it's fake. I don't think it. I mean, like, I think it's a, so as someone who's somewhat familiar with the reality TV world, to me, it's like a reality TV relationship where you're like, you have like a vested interest from both sides to want to keep this going, to like want to keep whatever ruse it is, because like their fan bases, you think about the NFL fan base, Travis Kelce fan base, Taylor Swift fan base, they're like the Venn diagram of those two has like such a small sliver of overlap. And so you're getting, Taylor Swift has a bunch of new people getting exposed to her and her music, and vice versa. Travis Kelce, the NFL, has a bunch of new people getting exposed to the NFL. Now you can't look at it, you can't go anywhere without Travis Kelce being on a commercial. And it's like, right, that wasn't going to happen unless Taylor Swift was here. So I think it's like a convenient thing. But if you're to tell me that like they're, you know, in love. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if they've never, like, even kissed at this point.
Well, since you brought it up, to our listeners that do not know, talk about your, I didn't want to, like, introduce you to that because you're so much more than a reality TV star.
Thank you.
But for the listeners that don't know what show you were on, here's the floor.
I was on The Bachelorette in 2018. I got two roses. I got sent home. I got less camera time than Taylor Swift gets on a normal Sunday Chiefs game. So it was a cool experience, but that was the extent of my reality TV stardom.
What made you decide to do it? Were you actually looking for love, or were you looking to get your name out there?
I was actually just a fan of the show, and I was just looking to, like, be on the show. And I was looking for love. Yeah. Like, there are better places to look for love than in a house with 29 guys and one girl. But it was fun. It was, like, an interesting. I went on because I was a fan of the show and just wanted to see what it was all about. And now, honestly, I'm not a fan of the show after going on. They're not, like, not a fan of the show, but it's just, like, it lost the magic to me seeing how the sausage was made.
How fake is it?
I mean, like, you still, like, control what you say and whatnot, but, like, you're pretty much nothing makes TV that you weren't told to talk about in the first place. Like, you weren't, like, told to sit and, like, discuss. Like, if, like, just the real life aspects of it, of just going about your day-to-day whatever, it, like, none of that makes air. It's, like, that's all just that. They're just, like, deleting that tape as soon as it gets on.
Sorry for the listeners who are big Bachelor or Bachelorette fans. Sorry about this. But who was the woman that won it was her season?
Becca Kufrin, who's now, I believe, married. The one that got away.
Okay. Well, you got two roses, so that's pretty awesome. I did. It's more than a lot of people can say.
Yeah, it was, I probably didn't deserve to, though. I didn't actually even talk to her the first night, so don't know how I got one.
Well, for more conversations about Mike and his time on The Bachelorette, we can get to that at another time, because most of our listeners here are here to hear about the Bengals and, of course, the NFL. So a win, you know, we haven't been on the podcast talking about, well, they did beat the Rams, but it almost felt like that didn't even count because of just how much of a shell Joe Burrow and the offense looked of themselves. And I texted you on Sunday and I said, are the Bengals ... back? Thoughts on the win in Arizona, Joe Burrow, the offense, and what you were able to see from the team?
Yeah, it was actually, I think, the first Monday all year. I was like, let me watch this tape. I was excited to watch this tape. And now, caveat being, not a great football team they played, obviously. Like, they were a 1-4 team. You're supposed to look like this, right? So that's, like, good start, yes, but some very encouraging signs. Biggest one, Joe Burrow can move. Like if you had told me before, if I had never heard that Joe Burrow had hurt his calf or whatever, I flip on that game, I would never have known. He was moving around. He had that 360 spin in the pocket. They called up, like, a few other and some actual rollouts in this game, a few, like, deep drops where he then had to climb the pocket and deliver balls down the field. And honestly, like, the throw to Chase, the deep ball, that was one of the farthest throws, like, of Joe Burrow's
ever made.
Career.
Yeah.
Yeah. That thing was actually had some heat. Like, that was not something he was doing weeks 1-4, right? He just flat out was not stepping into throws like that and putting some sauce on it. And so, great to see. I mean, that maybe he still has some ill effects from it, whatnot, but they're at least running their offense. They can run the whole offense. And I think the other thing that I really liked that I saw from this offense was, and obviously, like, they had to adjust, no T. Higgins. I think their game plan of not only featuring Ja'Marr Chase and just saying, like, hey, we're going to feature him in the offense, but also when he wasn't featured, they used him as a decoy a lot, whether it was singled up on one side, by himself with three wide receivers on the other side, or when he was on their side with like a couple wide receivers, they had him running either fake bubbles or screens and stuff to that side where it was like, we're having him come out in motion and like faking it to it where defense had to have their eyes on him, right? Like, so they were using him, whether he wasn't getting featured, he was obviously featured a ton. They were using him as a decoy for other people in the passing game that I think when T. Higgins was around, and obviously I'm like, they're going to be better when T. Higgins back, but like when T. Higgins was around, there wasn't that to the offense. He was kind of just another guy in the progression, right? It wasn't like a, hey, let's get the ball to Chase. Yeah. It's like, as I said, I think I said last week, he's not always open, but even when sometimes when he's not open, he can make plays. Like Ja'Marr Chase is that good enough guy that you just can go to him, feature him until they make you stop featuring him, right? Like you get him the ball until teams make you stop getting him the ball. Then you go elsewhere. And I love that they did that in this game.
Yeah, I mean, 19 targets, that's a lot. And you don't expect him to get that many targets every week, but, you know, don't mess up what's working for you. And right now, like, I would love if the Bengals, even if T. Higgins is back this week, I mean, he still might not be himself. He's got a broken rib. You know, how much does that factor into it pain-wise? Don't just feel like you have to spread the targets out for the sake of spreading the targets out, because if it's working, Tyler Boyd, I know you got to find ways to get him and see the ball, but I love what you're saying and just like keep feeding him. I think about how like every Rams game last year and the year before, I mean, Cooper Kupp probably had at least 10 to 11 targets. And there's a lot of similarities between those two and the way they play the game. So, I mean, I think you're looking at like at least, you know, 10 to 15 targets for Ja'Marr Chase per game. It's not unrealistic to think that that is what the Bengals should do. And I think especially in this game, and we'll talk a little bit more, I'll get your thoughts on Seattle, but Seattle's defense, I mean, originated the death by paper cuts defense where they try and make you go the field, the short completions, and they're betting on you not being able to complete as many passes as you need to be able to march down the field. This is especially where Ja'Marr Chase, yeah, they might not give up that 63-yard deep yard pass, but he's so good with his yards after catch and just making people miss that even if it's taking, you know, slant routes, 10-yard slant routes and turning them into 13, 14-yard gains because he can break one or two tackles, I think he's still got to be a huge part of this game. And just because he had his big game doesn't mean in T and Tyler are back this weekend. Like, don't just spread the ball around for the sake of spreading the ball around, right?
100%. And he hit the nail on the head there with like the post catch ability. It really is like Ja'Marr Chase and then Boyd and Higgins are like, it's a different level of what he can do with the ball in his hands. That if you are going to, and like, I don't think they really switched up their game plan too much. Like, it truly was, if Joe Burrow wasn't able to move and wasn't able to sling it down the field, you lose a lot of big plays in that game, right? Like, you lose the deep ball to Chase touchdown, you lose the scramble drill to Chase. I think both of his touchdowns were kind of scramble drills to Chase. Mm-hmm. Like, losing those could have been the difference in the game. Like, if Joe Burrow couldn't move and couldn't, like, push the ball down the football field, we are probably still talking about the same offense we saw the past couple weeks because, I mean, that's just, they didn't really change up much of the game plans outside of that. But I do just think that that Ja'Marr Chase is just like, that's where he's going to thrive, is those plays. And so getting those back is going to just take this offense back to where, I mean, look back to where it was.
I feel like in some ways coaches try to make it more complicated than it needs to be. Like, I think about Dallas, for example, right? There's so much talk right now about why they're not using CeeDee Lamb enough. And then you hear the coaches say, we need to use him more. And it's like, how is that even a thought? Like, how is that not at the top of your game plan? We need to use this guy as much as possible. And I know certain coverages and schemes allow for different things, but it's just kind of mind-blowing to me when coaches, offensive coaches, their best receiver, they come out of a game, they're like, yeah, we need to use him more. It's like, well, how is that even a question?
Well, I mean, that's kind of what separates the good play callers from the bad ones, right? It's like you go watch a Rams game, and you already brought it up, but like they're scheming, some of their plays have no one else but go to Cooper Kupp, right? It is everything is the scheme is to put enough window dressing to get Cooper Kupp a one-on-one. And it's like, because he's your best guy, because he's going to win those. But a head coach doesn't really get credit when that's the case, right? Like right. The play caller doesn't get credit when it's like, oh, our best player won a one-on-one. Where, like, that's not good scheme, right? But it kind of is. It is good scheme when you have good players and you're featuring them. But they get credit when their route concept freed a guy open to a wide open play for their quarterback. And then it's like, oh, wow, look at that scheme. That was perfect. So I think there's kind of this inbuilt, I mean, everyone's kind of selfish. Like, everyone's going to do what's in their best interest. There's like this inbuilt decision making that kind of pushes play callers, pushes offensive coordinators to wanting it be the scheme that's the thing that's getting guys open and not necessarily the players. But as we've seen time and time again in the NFL, it's the teams that put their best players, their elite talent in a position to succeed. Those are the ones that usually are the most consistent offenses.
Well, I have a couple of thoughts before we move on to the next topic. Joe Burrow said yesterday in his press conference to us, this is the closest he's felt to being 100% since training camp when the injury originally happened. So very encouraging news. He thinks he's almost back to 100%. All the Bengals need to do is win this game. He doesn't suffer a setback. That's the most important thing. His calf cannot suffer a setback. Then you have 10 days, a bye week, 10 days for him to really get that thing 100%. And then you're going to play the 49ers, which is going to be a tough game. But, you know, things happen, miracles happen, and they could win that game. But the whole point is about the not suffering the setback to the calf. Because if you can get him through this bye week, get that thing healed, then you have your guy healthy and ready to go for the toughest stretch that you have coming out of the bye week. So I think that's the most important and obvious thing that needs to happen this week for the Bengals. With that being said, what do you think about this matchup? Because early on, you're like, Bengals Seahawks in week six, like it might not be that important of a game. If you look at all the other games this weekend, this is the marquee game of the weekend, in my opinion. They've got CBS's number two crew. All the other games are just kind of like meh games. This has suddenly become, because of Joe Burrow's resurgence last week, this has kind of become one of the best games on this weekend slate, don't you think?
I think it's a great litmus test. Like, the Seahawks are kind of that second tier of team in the NFL that if you are the Bengals, you're hoping to be like a tier one team in the NFL. So if you should, if Joe Burrow is at full health, like, this is a team that at home you should take care of. Like, these are the games that you should expect to win if you are going to be another AFC championship game, another super, like, hoping to get back to the Super Bowl. This is a game you should win, but it's not going to be easy, right? Like, this is a good football team. I think the one matchup that I like for the Bengals in this is the fact that Seattle's defensive line is not have the teeth of some of the defensive lines they face this year. This isn't the Browns. This isn't the Titans. It's probably a step above the Cardinals, but it's somewhere in that middle that if this offensive line, which, you know, been fully healthy all year, no health issues, knock on wood, they've, like, cohesive. They just came off, in my opinion, the best game they've played all year against the Arizona Cardinals. This is a game that, like, they got to show up and keep Joe Burrow upright for just the reasons you outlined there of can't have a setback going into the bye week, but also, like, they should be able to operate their offense the way they did this past week if that offensive line can keep Joe Burrow healthy and or keep Joe Burrow upright and some holes in the run game. So that's the matchup that they have to win this week. This is where you spend all this money, all this draft capital to rebuild this offensive line. They have to come to play this week.
That's a really interesting thought that you said that's the best game that the offensive line has played. That's encouraging sign that they're gelling together and they're, you know, playing well. Obviously, Arizona's defensive line wasn't, you know, vicious like some of the other, but it's still an NFL offensive line. So let's talk about the defensive side of the ball, because that's where I have questions. I think it's because of the standard you came into the season thinking about with the Bengals defense because of the last 2 years and just how good they've been. They're not a unit that you talk about a lot because they don't have those flashy names, but they've been really good in the last 2 years. And I think everybody just assumed that coming into the season, only losing Vaughn and Jesse and getting everybody back, like everything would be A-okay. But it sure seems like the youth of the secondary, whether it be DJ Turner, who actually had a fantastic game, in my opinion. I know you've been high on him. But the youth of Cam Taylor, Britt, Dax Hill, DJ Turner, and Nick Scott, he's not young, but new into this defense. They've given up more explosive plays in the first five games than we saw them give up almost all of last year. Do you think the issues going on with the Bengals can be corrected on defense, or do you think it's kind of based on the fact that personnel-wise, and this is just kind of how it's going to be without a better, strong safety and that veteran leadership?
Yeah, I think you're just seeing kind of the fact that you took a step back from a talent perspective, that you're not as veteran as you were a year ago. So you're just going to have some inconsistency. Like even Cam Taylor Britt's been just still like a little up and down, even though I'm a fan of his game. Like he almost gave up a real big play early on in that game to Marquise Brown. And then, you know, when you don't have Cheeto, it kind of has this trickle down effect to where, you know, you have Jalen Davis on the field and he's given up a touchdown. Like you want to be like the kind of the whole why they were so good was they just had no weaknesses in that secondary for the past 2 years. And like no real weak links, no glaring weak links. And now when you kind of just chip away a little bit, it's defense is a weak link sort of proposition. The teams are going to attack your worst corner. They're going to attack your worst defensive lineman. They're going to attack your worst linebacker. Like if they have a guy that is an issue, you're going to go after him. And so I think that's more what you're seeing with some of these big plays is that you just don't have the consistency on the back end that you once did.
One more question for you on the Bengals defense, since how fresh this person's tape is probably on your mind. Yesterday, Lou Anarumo said that Nick Scott and Jordan Battle are going to basically split time. Like you're going to see Jordan on the field in the game against the Cardinals. He came in for a series and Nick Scott was on the sideline. It wasn't injury related. Lou said, I just wanted to get him some reps. Jordan's earned the right to get reps in a game. What should our listeners know about Jordan Battle and what he can be in Lou's defense, knowing that you know the scheme and what Lou wants from his safeties?
I mean, he's a lot like Von Bell was, truthfully. Like that, he's closer to that than he is to Jesse Bates, if we're going like comps to Bengals safeties. Like he is more of a box guy, comfortable on around the line of scrimmage, fantastic tackler. I think he was one of the most consistent safeties in this draft class, which I can see why you would want to get him more snaps because, again, I just talked about the inconsistency sometimes of these guys in the secondary. I'm not sure he's going to make a ton of splash plays. Like he's not a high-end athlete per se, but I mean, he's a four-year starter at Alabama. Like I started as a freshman for Nick Saban, which like he doesn't put guys out there as a freshman unless they know that scheme inside and out. So not surprising that he would pick up the playbook this quickly and start to usurp some snaps here because that's just who he is. I think he's a guy that when you put him on the back end, isn't going to range and make plays, but I think you want him around the line of scrimmage. And I think they even blitzed him some this past week. I think he had like an impact play as a blitzer that they could use, right? They could use a guy that's a little more versatile around the line of scrimmage right now.
Yeah, we'll see how that unfolds. And you never know if Jordan Battle outplays Nick Scott with the bye week coming. Moving forward, Jordan Battle can end up being the starter for the rest of the season, but they're certainly going to give those guys the time to kind of duke it out. But I think what I know about Lou's defense is he doesn't like mistakes and missed tackles really bug him. So if obviously it bug any defensive coordinator, but especially him, he's willing to take a flyer on a rookie DB if he can tackle and be a sure tackler, and that's exactly what they need back there. So we'll see with Jordan, but I wanted to get your thoughts because I know you recently had your evaluations with him being a rookie. And I remember draft night, I was like, oh, the Bengals took a safety in the third round. Like, that's kind of interesting. But that goes to show why just because a team has two starters on paper doesn't mean that you stop drafting if that's the best player available on your board. And that seemed to be the case with Jordan Battle because they had just drafted Dax, just signed Nick Scott, and you said, the Bengals are taking a safety in the third round. Like, that's interesting. But that goes to show why the whole BPA thing is like what teams do.
Yeah. And like I said before about the back end of the defense, they're going to attack the worst guy. And so like when you have, so if one of the safeties did get hurt and you didn't have a Jordan Battle, man, you'd be SOL. You're having to really protect someone then. And what they've done in the whole Lou Anarumo era is make sure they have no liabilities. So they like do whatever it takes to make sure that no one is a guy that can be attacked. And I don't think Jordan Battle, I wouldn't worry about him being going out there making boneheaded plays and being a guy that's going to get picked on.
That's probably a sigh of relief for those who, you know, don't know that about Jordan, but just see a rookie out there. So definitely wanted to get your thoughts on that. Before we head out, I want to get your, you have a podcast, another podcast. So if you like Mike, listening to him talk about the Bengals, good news, you can get him daily. Would you like to talk a little bit about your podcast that you just launched?
Yes. It's called Renner Ranks. It's on the Locked On Network. You can find it anywhere you find podcasts, but it's not going to just be about the Bengals. It's going to be more about, it's going to be a little more lighthearted than my own analysis here. We talk about, it's a daily rankings podcast. It's going to be a lot of player evaluation focus because that's obviously with my job. I do draft, I do rookies, I do like rookie contract guys. So it's going to be a lot of that, but then also some lighthearted stuff and going to have a lot of guests and friends in the industry. So it should be fun.
Well, I look forward to listening to it and be sure to check that out. Mike's analysis and good draft and NFL commentary doesn't just stop at the Bengals. He keeps all of that for us on this podcast, right? but looking forward to chatting with you next week, bye week. So I was thinking that we could maybe get into some of your further draft thoughts, knowing that they'll have played six games at that point. Maybe you could potentially have some fits in mind and we can, you know, talk a little bit more about that, but really wanted to get your thoughts on the upcoming game against the Seahawks and the performance from the Bengals last week. So as always, thanks so much for joining me and looking forward to talking to you next week.
For sure, Kelsey. Have a good one.
All right. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you guys next week.